significant wardrobe shift.
Hello, and welcome to the Sadcast on Monday, the 1st of December, 2025. I'm your host, Dan Train. Joining me today, Zachary Burgess.
Ain't no wardrobe in here.
And Robert Kemp.
Gee, slaveries.
Okay.
In the wardrobe?
It's near Christmas, I guess.
Yeah, they're not really... Yeah, nothing to do with the wardrobe thing. But they're like the king of, like, party nibbles.
Cheese savories.
Well, you know the ones that are like almost like deck of cards suits shapes.
Yes. Yeah,
shapes.
Oh, they're so delicious.
I wouldn't have said that they're like the best of anything.
Oh my
they're
God.
Like I can't. Hella average.
Oh man, but they're like crack of nibbles. Like if there's a bowl of them in front of me, they are good.
I think most things in that form are like, you know, continuously edible.
Do you think like variety is super important for the party finger food, or do you just want all of just the best one?
That is a good point, because
you just want one giant bowl of cheese.
Yeah,
I suppose that is the one disadvantage to the cheese savory cheese. Because it has like the cheddar's effect, because they're like mini cheddar's adjacent, right? Like the first cheddar is always amazing, but there is a drop off at that point. You're just hooked and you just need the salt hit. You just need it to feel something.
Dry roasted peanuts. That's what I can never stop eating.
Man, they are good.
I can't have that, damn it.
Nope.
I'll die. Need another.
No, these ridiculous deliciousness of continuous dry roasted peanuts.
Why don't they try to have some other kind of salt delivery device? Yeah, exactly. There's got to be something I can be.
Yeah, couldn't they dry roast a cheese savory?
Right.
How are you with other types of nuts? Because I think they've done like dry roasted cashews.
I'm sure they do, but I just don't bother, because why bother?
Why bother with anything?
Why bother with nuts if you're allergic to one kind? Although I'm sure. Peanuts are technically not even nuts, but regardless, no. There's no point. I don't think I would be a fan, even if I was not allergic somehow. I don't know.
I don't know that nuts are generally a super desirable flavor for me, but like you dry roast a peanut and suddenly it like becomes god tier.
Well, yeah, like raw peanuts kind of suck a lot.
They're
and
right.
Even salted is only like fine.
Yeah.
So would you have the peanut M&Ms over the irregular ones?
No. Generally, I avoid anything peanut, like apart from satay sauce. Like, satay sauce is amazing, but, like, I've never been into peanut butter. That stuff is horrible.
I think that's the thing that a lot of people would miss, I think, is the peanut butter, something about... I don't know. It's because it's, like, I don't have it at all, but it's because it's, like, thick and protein-y compared to other things in that kind of category, like jam.
Peanut butter's just always triggered something in me. You know, we've talked about it on the podcast before, how I have, like, these weird queasy triggers these days. But peanut butter has kind of always been that, like for my entire life. Like just the smell of it. Like, do you remember those like KP dip boxes things or something? Where it was like, it was like a little pot you got that was of peanut butter and like breadsticks to dip in it. Oh my god, those things haunt me. I think they actually gave me nightmares of how ill the smell of that made me. Like it's.
I was on a flight last week and they actually made the announcement, you know, don't open the freaking bag of dry roasted peanuts because someone on here is not going to have a good time if you do.
Oh, no. Right. Okay, I guess in case air gets in the circulation.
Yeah, literally it gets circulated. It's like a whole thing.
But surely they would have, like, handed out them.
Apparently there is. Is there such a thing as nut air? Well, it's air with suspended nut dry roast nut particles.
I mean, it was November.
Surely you don't hand out the bag of nuts if there's someone like, why does this announcement happen?
No, like, right, yeah. Finally got it, just a stupid joke. Why does that? That's why that happens, right? It wasn't for me, by the way.
Sure.
Luckily.
But like, is it just, were they not referencing like the nuts that the plane would give you, but just in case anyone else had bought any nuts on board?
The plane gives me nuts?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this was Ryanair, so they probably weren't handing out. Although they probably do have packets of it. I don't know. They'll sell you any shit, won't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you spend more money.
It's been a while since I've flown, but like last few times I've been on a flight, they've given you one at like those little snack pretzel packs, like with a sour creamy sort of coating on them. If that not really coating, but you know what I mean. They're supposed to be like cream and chive, I think, flavored mini pretzels. Right. I forget what the brand is, but it's probably called like American pretzels or something stupid. But like, but yeah, those seem to always be the thing.
I do like those chocolate covered pretzels, flips or whatever.
Oh, pretzel flips. They're incredible.
Stick those in a bowl. Like, all of that.
They're still about.
I eat all of them.
They are still about. But yeah. They don't have like the white chocolate flavor, which used to be my go-to. Like those used to be amazing. But
why would that be better? Like, white chocolate.
I don't know. I've just always had a bit of a taste. I like white chocolate. Oh, I love it. But okay. I've just always had a bit of a taste for it. But it was like salty white chocolate, which is quite unusual.
Quite unusual, yeah.
And yeah, I thought it was amazing. But don't be confused. They do have a white thing now, but it's like fudge or something. Yeah. It's not good.
Except no imitation.
Except no imitation, yeah. Okay. You want like pure 90s pretzel flips.
Well, that is our problem. It's like all we want is 90s snack food that doesn't exist any longer or has been gradually ruined.
Yeah, like a 90s Mars bar. Oh my God.
There must be new things. We've got to go out and find. I'm relatively successful with music. I feel like I'm finding things that I like that are brand new. Not brand new, but you know, made by the kids.
There are, really.
Yeah. I tried one. This is not really in the class of snack food, but I tried those weird, like, those nerd gummy things.
Nerd gummy things?
There must have been some innovation in the space, right? What are these, then?
It's a tiny, like, imagine, like, a gummy bear, like a tiny blob of gumminess.
Like Haribo.
But then it's coated in, like, miniature nerds.
Oh,
okay.
Well, that
and it's just like nice. I mean, I just like nerds, so you know.
Yeah, sure. Man, yeah, nerds and dweebs. They're lovely. They're weird.
That sounds. I want to try that, Zach.
Yeah.
What brand is that? Is that like?
It's actually still like literal nerds.
Nerds.
Like somehow that brand still exists.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
That's cool.
I'm not sure if they. I think they probably do still actually make actual nerds as well if you can find them, but they're kind of rarer.
Candy bar, are they like subject to the sugar tax in the UK? Is that like there's like less?
I don't know if they are, because it was only meant to be for drinks, wasn't it? Like
Coke.
That was kind of the point.
And
because it was way too easy to ingest far more sugar than you thought you were when you're drinking it.
They are extending it though, aren't they? Or I don't know. There's some update to it.
Yeah, milkshakes and lattes are included now. Like
good
bottled and canned lattes for some reason here and there.
I feel like it's cool that actually works, like that tax.
Yeah,
and people aren't. There isn't like a backlash against it.
No,
like, remember the pasty tax thing for Greg? So it's like, yeah, there's a backlash against that. But I mean, I think most people are like, well, fair enough.
it's kind of difficult to argue against sugary confection taxes because they are nothing but bad for you. But also, oh my God, that's something that can be really nice, man. Like, why are you taxing my choice?
That's what people say, right? But I don't know. I think it's fine. It's mainly to stop the kids. It's not like it's hugely expensive.
There's an element of it.
In theory, like, it's only a tax and it's not like they're banned, it just makes it better when you can have it. Like, you spend that extra money once in a while and then you get the good shit and you're like, holy shit.
I still thought it was mental. This is probably, I'm probably remembering this very simplistically, but I think, I mean, this is probably not true, but like in my mind, with my pocket money, I would save up and then buy Lego or something, which was expensive.
Yeah.
And then in my mind, Zach, you got some allowance to buy sweets every week, but then when you got braces, buy them and you put them in a big box.
Yeah, that was
and you had a giant box of all the sweets in the world.
I did that as well. That was a colossal error because I then don't know what happened to the box.
How
did you manage
that?
I don't know.
Well aware of where that box was.
I think Mum found it or something. I'm not sure she knew what
she
was doing.
She disposed of it.
And was just like, this stuff's been in here for a really long time.
Well, you have to buy the right kind of stuff, obviously. Yeah. That's the trick.
I can't remember if I was banned from spending my pocket money on sweets or if I consciously had the self-control to save it for Lego. That seems unlikely, right?
No, but, maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, I remember you buying Boost bars.
That was a bit later, wasn't it? Yeah. But yeah.
My trick was that like it wasn't pocket money at all. It was siphoned off from school dinner money.
That's right. That's the trick. So you got the shittiest chips or whatever you could get.
And then ate even more shit with the leftover money.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Strategize. Yeah. That's pretty good.
I mean, if it wasn't the literal sweets, it was like double chocolate eclair every day on the way home.
Wait,
from the bakery.
Shit. Oh my god, yeah. Wait, hold on. You had to like literally pay for your school dinner
at the till
up
yeah.
front.
No, like at the till in the cafeteria.
Wow. Okay.
It was probably way too inconvenient if the school had been any bigger. Like, there's no way they could run that system with a larger number of people.
Yeah, I always assumed it was something like, oh, you're on the school dinner roster, you're okay. But like,
no, we did it with literal money, which is how I ran this whole scam, obviously, because I had like literal coins. It was just like, I could just not spend some of this at the place where I meant to be spending it.
That's, if you're hungry, that's some dedication.
I mean, I was fine with eating like chips and chicken nuggets every day.
I think I would be.
That's why we need this sugar tax situation to come in. Yeah, the fucking, what's his face? Who's the chef who's always fed up about it?
Oliver,
that's the one.
Oliver!
Please, sir, can I have some more?
No.
No. That's Oliver for you.
You can have some kale. I'd like it. Can I pour some sugar on it?
If you pay the tax. Got any salmon?
Lovely.
Anyway, that's the stack section of the podcast.
Yeah. Cheese savories, man. I don't know. I only brought that up just because I like rediscovered it. I just bought a pack and was just like, oh, where have you been for so long? And so I turned out just right there, you know. Just they never went away.
Okay, just a bowl of those, want a bowl of flips, milk chocolate, and
it's dinner sorted.
I mean, the thing that I would want that I like is, I've never been entirely clear on what happened, but it was like, I always loved Brazil nuts, chocolate covered Brazil nuts, especially at Christmas.
Oh, right.
And then there was that weird period where like they went away because there was some weird supply issue or like some disease or something happened in Brazil or wherever they were grown, and they like the supply dried up for a while. But I think it's like, I think you can just get them again now. But like,
right. Yeah, I think I've only seen them in like, it's not something you see like just casually on the shelves, right? They tend to be part of like a selection box.
Well, in pure nut form, they'll be in like, you know,
mixed bags,
piles, or whatever. But like in chocolate covered Brazil nut form, because the way I used to have them was like, you just buy, it was just like literally a like chocolate box, but only chocolate covered Brazil nuts.
Right.
It was the only thing in there. It wasn't a selection. It was just one thing, but there was like 20 of them.
This is really nice. But like, Gnome's parents have got us, or Gnome's dad, sorry, has got us this chocolate box for the last couple years, I think, that's sort of like chocolate covered nuts. And it's like, and they are delicious. They're lovely. But like, the chocolate's doing a lot of the work.
Not with Brazil nuts. That was the trick.
But there's always like one in this box that's like, not, it's not it's not unpleasant taste-wise, but the nut is like so incredibly solid inside this chocolate that it is like trying to chew a jawbreaker, but that's the only way to get at it. It's, I don't know why they thought that whatever that nut was, why it was a good idea, because it's so difficult to eat. Like it's the kind of, when it cracks, it's that kind of noise that makes you think like you've broken your skull. Yeah.
Wow.
Go straight through your ears. And then you take it out of your ears and put it in your mouth.
I very nearly ordered, topical, I guess, Black Friday shopping. I was on Amazon and I very nearly just went like, I'm just going to order like a kilogram bag of licorice all sorts. But then I didn't. I resisted.
You could recreate your experience of having your braces taken out of another giant bag of whatever the hell you had
If you really want to live that experience, you've got to like hoard chocolate for a few months.
Yeah, you would have it for like...
Well, I mean, there was... there was like one time when I just did that. I did essentially just an Amazon order that was just random, like a whole pile of random sweets just in one giant box.
Nice.
Although, as in one Amazon package box, not like it was a pre-made thing or anything.
Sure. Yeah.
But I was just like, I'm just going to buy all this shit that I like in one go and just then have. But because I was not a child by this point, obviously, I was like, I can resist eating all of this at once. I can actually meter this out over a period of time.
And did you?
Yes.
Wow.
I think I always could. I never was that bad with sweets.
Mm.
I don't just have to have them all at once.
I mean, I still kind of do, but like it's upgraded to like a bag. Like I'll eat a whole bag of licorice all sorts in a day.
As an adult, for me, it's clearly biscuits. Like the whole packet of biscuits is probably going to be gone if it gets opened.
I should say I want to do these things. I just don't. I do have to hold back.
Yeah,
I just can't do it as much as I want to because my teeth are weak. Like I can't be exposed to that much sugar in one go any longer.
Mm-hmm.
So much for all that braces effort. Not that they made my teeth any straighter either. Fucking
did they not?
I didn't really get anything out of that process.
Well, they must have moved them a little bit, but then your mouth just shifts again, right?
Less, well, the thing is,
mine are still a bit crooked today. Like
the thing is, like my teeth are not very straight now, and I had braces for all that time. But like in the process of having those braces, I've had teeth out. Like I'm down like four teeth, and my teeth are still not straight now.
Yeah, same. I'm down.
So it's like, just imagine if I hadn't had those teeth out.
I'm down at least four teeth now because I've had four out from next to my canines, I think, and then. Yeah, some wisdoms out.
Yeah, well, wisdoms don't count for this part of the process.
I guess not, but I guess they could squeeze it in.
Well, yes, they can eventually. Yeah. But, like, that's just, everyone gets that kind of most of the time. Whereas, like, the fact that I had to have teeth out during my teens to fix the already occurring problem then, and it still, like, you know, didn't hold up afterwards.
Yeah, same. My top row's okay. It's my bottom row. My bottom row's not so hot. Let's all go to Turkey.
Seems like the wrong number.
Bulgaria. That's where you get it.
Oh, is it? Is it's no longer Turkey teeth? It's Bulgarian teeth.
Oh, I've still seen Turkey quite often.
Yeah. I'm sure, it's both good. It's both probably better quality and a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I don't know about better. I have some high skepticism of that. I haven't got a segue to say this is a podcast about video games.
But it is.
Do you want to talk about Black Friday shopping?
Did you find anything good? Because I didn't really look, to be fair. Like, I don't know.
Well,
this has been an incredibly expensive month for me, and I haven't even done anything Christmas.
No.
Oh, no.
So... I made an
Amazon package of stuff, but like only one of them was actually a Black Friday thing. It was just an excuse to remember to buy a bunch of stuff that I needed to buy anyway. And it was like, oh well, one of them is slightly cheaper.
I mean, you know, like I mean, licorice should be a Black Friday deal, right? It's right there.
Well, I when I was looking in the big pile of sweets, I was like, oh look, a huge tub of blackjacks. You can really have that licorice flavour ingrained in your teeth forever.
Truly Black Friday.
Oh, I hate licorice. Red licorice is okay. Black licorice, I don't know.
Because it isn't really licorice.
Because, yeah, exactly. Blair. No, I didn't do a lot of Black Fridaying.
I got the Star Trek Lego on Black Friday, which was when it came out. I went to the shop and got it signed and all that shit. Wasn't too bad. The queue was not too bad compared to Rivendell, the Lord of the Rings one. That was out the door. This was like, I don't think people realised. But apparently it has sold out everywhere, online and stuff. So it was worth going to the... And also, it's easy for me to go to Leicester Square. But I haven't built it. It's in my hallway. But I'm thinking about maybe waiting because I did the very small Millennium Falcon, which is really cool, with like I got a lighting kit for it, like aftermarket lighting kit. And I looked and they haven't made one yet because presumably the set's only just come out, so they must have to do a design process.
Sure.
So I think it might be worth, because it's, they usually, those kits aftermarket, it's quite a good brand that it's called Light My Bricks that I tried before. But like they have instructions for retrofitting the stuff if you've already built the thing, which is likely, or they have like, as you build it, put the lights in.
Yeah,
and that's probably cool. A lot easier, especially with this model.
Yeah,
I mean, Star Trek lights is going to be sick. Like that.
Yeah, it's going to be
blue
sick.
Like nacelles is going to be
cool. Exactly. Red Buzzard collectors and a blue deflector dish. It's going to be fucking awesome.
Does it have like, especially if it, does it, will it have a little animatey on the top? You know what I mean? Like, didn't it have like a little like spreads out pattern on the top of? Or am I thinking? Oh, I'm probably thinking of on the bridge, aren't I? Where they had that sort of yellow ping on, underneath the screen.
Yes, they had the Cylon.
Oh yeah,
beam.
Cylon beam. Yeah. I mean, the TOS original Enterprise like Buzzard collectors had a crazy like spinny light on, which was way cool on like the first like 60s ones. But they kind of got rid of that, unfortunately. but yeah, so yeah, it's sitting. But it did come with a gift with purchase, which is this... I can't tell... People get annoyed about it online and stuff, but basically they give you a free gift, but it's like a set that you can't buy. So it's annoying for like collectors.
Oh, wow.
Right? And it's limited supply. And it's cool because it's a little shuttle, which is like minifig scale, which is okay because they're tiny, right? The little shuttle from TNG. So it's like the shuttle pod, the one that's actually on the set or whatever. And it's quite cool, but it comes with, obviously, an exclusive minifigure, which is Ro Laren. I don't know if you know that character from TNG.
No.
It's the Michelle Forbes character. So she's Dr. Judith Mothman in Half-Life 2.
Oh, okay. Right, yes, I'm with you. I'm with you.
And she's like in 24 and she's in Battlestar Galactica. She's like the evil admiral in Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah,
anyway,
I'm with you.
She was on TNG, and so that's the only way you can get that minifigure. And so, you know, they give it away for free, but like I'm sure like collectors would be annoyed because there's no way you can buy it if you don't have it.
That's so
dumb stuff like that. So I made that because that was easy. Although that's the one I should have kept in the box and then sold.
Yeah.
But I don't care about that. I want the little Ro Laren because I like Ro Laren. She's just always pissed off at everything. She's like the Bajoran, right? And she's the first Bajoran introduced into Star Trek, I think. And she was supposed to be in DS9, but the actress didn't want to do it, understandably. Oh, I don't know. So they invented a new character, like a Major Kira, right?
Is okay, yes. DS9?
Yeah. But that was supposed to be Ro Laren, I think, originally. Anyway.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so cool. I have that ready. That was my Black Friday shopping.
Yeah. I mean, technically, it's like now it's like a whole period of time, right? So you probably haven't missed anything.
Yes, I've seen like YouTube adverts naturally. People need to standardize what they call it because it's like obviously you've got Black Friday and you've got like Cyber Monday or whatever. Sure. And those are fairly standardized. But I've seen people referring to it as Black Week and Cyber Week.
I've heard Black Week a lot this year. I don't know that I like that. That for some reason that sounds off.
Yeah, it sounds off. It's quite weird
Cyber
already.
Week is better, really.
Yeah, Cyber Week, I guess.
Everything cyber. Has to
cyber
have
is such a cyber is such a strange adjective. Like it's used for such strange things in terms of like. They still, with a straight face, call it like cyber warfare, right?
Yeah.
Or stuff like that, don't they? When they mean like internet or electronic warfare, or not? I suppose that it's not
electronics.
Warfare,
is different,
right?
Yeah.
That's not used.
Well, data theft, I guess.
Cyber security.
Yeah, that's all cyber. The internet cyber. Is cyber. It's not which is an unfortunate thing because like cyber was supposed to be like being. A bit robot-y, right? That was that one a part of it?
Cybernetic,
like,
right?
Cybernetic, yeah. And so
like
boring.
Cybernetic was already a weird thing because you've got like the whole problem of the differentiation between like cyborgs and androids, and like it's all the words that mean they do technically mean different things, but it's so tinily different that it's just like we have to just pick one of these.
you're a cyborg, you have cybernetics. If you're an android, you don't. It's that simple.
Do androids have then? Not cybernetics.
Androids are humanoid shaped, right? Unlike, whereas robots aren't necessarily.
I suppose, yeah.
But Data's always going on about being an android, isn't he?
Because that's how they
gets insulted if people call him a robot. Well, not really insulting because he doesn't have emotions, but unless he plugs in that chip.
And then you advance Star Trek to the present and you call them a clanker or something. then you get problems.
Yeah.
I haven't started watching that, Stranger Things.
Neither have I. Do we have to? I guess we do.
Yeah, I kind of do at this point, right?
TV that's like, you know, water cooler or whatever, because everyone has to fucking watch it or whatever. And it's like,
sure, but
I wasn't sure if I could be bothered, but I guess I probably will.
But I
quite enjoyed the last one. It was fine. Although it's like they're so long. They're like an hour and a half every fucking episode.
Yeah, the last series wasn't as good as the previous ones, but
the metalhead guy was kind of saved it, in my view. He was a good character.
Oh, am I getting a bit confused? It might have been the one before. Well, yeah, the sort of main plot of the last one was okay, but the sort of side plot was less good, right? Sure. Was it the last series where they were in Russia or something?
Yeah, that's right. That's the side.
That whole side plot,
yeah.
Not important. But the which is a bit of a bummer. But I guess they tried to do something else, but it didn't sit. The main story was fine. I kind of just don't give a monkey's about Eleven anymore or any of that stuff. That's kind of the problem.
She
actually became such a not that interesting part of the story, which is frustrating.
100%. Yeah. I guess we'll see. Maybe they're good, aren't they? The Duffer brothers, right, who are creators of it. They always think of some kind of new aspect or spin.
Yeah.
I just feel like they could possibly do more than this.
It's fair enough that they're bringing it to a close. I think it's fine. Yeah. But it's been like, what, three years or something in the making, this one? Maybe a lot more, I forget, since the last series. But yeah, I will watch it because I like it, but like it's... I'm not going to be like, okay, I need to watch it now to talk to people about it. It's like, I'll get to it when Marzi's asleep, which is never.
You'd be slightly weird watching David Harbour after the Lily Allen album. I don't know if you've heard it, but God.
I've heard of it. I haven't listened to it, but
yeesh.
Yeah, no one was telling me about it. It's just, all right.
Pretty raw. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, would you get the same feeling if you watched him in Gran Turismo? There we go, there's the segue.
Oh, is he in Gran Turismo?
He's in the Gran Turismo film, yeah.
Which one? And then there's an F1 film, is that called?
That's Brad Pitt.
Okay. I don't know which one I want to.
I haven't seen F1 either, but I do want to watch both at some point.
I feel like F1, it's the director from like Top Gun Maverick, right? So would be kind of interesting from a technical point, you know, sort of filming point of view. So I would lean towards that one if I had to choose between watching one of those two, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you. But curiosity is there for sure. Both.
Sure.
I think Orlando Bloom's in the Gran Turismo movie.
Yeah. Yeah, who's the other one? Apart from Brad Pitt in the F1 movie. They feel like they're kind of the same movie, probably.
Yeah, I was to say Orlando Bloom's in that as well.
Yeah, it could be Orlando Bloom, that's fine. Yeah.
I think Hamilton shows up in it.
Well, you'd hope so. At least one F1 driver. Get a real F1 driver in there for a minute.
Yeah, maybe.
Just like Charles Martin in the Marrow.
Cameo in there.
So I watched that. I finished watching Alice in Borderland as well. The last season of that. Still had me gripped right at the end, even if the last game was a bit of a... it's not that. The last game isn't as interesting as some of the ones before it, but the very end itself is kind of odd. It's fine from a narrative point of view, but there's some physics there that where you're just like, I don't really understand what's happening. There's some stuff about the end sequence where it's just like, I don't know how you're how just how.
Sure.
I was quite into it. It's good. And they set it up like to suggest there may be more coming, but who knows? It hasn't been like labeled as, you know, the classic Netflix another season is coming tag. So I'm not sure. It's like, but then again, I didn't really know how they were going to do more after the end of season two, because that all seemed to wrap up quite neatly, and that's where the manga ended, right? Season three onwards is they're just making more for TV. So season three kind of wraps up, but then they hint at more on a larger scale, of course, because what are you? You have to go bigger, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's fun. I enjoy that quite a bit. I've watched three seasons of that, and I've only watched one of Squid Game. I don't know what that tells you. So,
yeah, I never got around to Squid Game.
I like Squid
before
Game.
Before I cancel my Netflix, I should probably have a look.
Squid Game is good, but for some reason I haven't felt the draw to go watch the next two seasons of it.
Well, I heard it ends on a cliffhanger, so maybe worth waiting and see if you don't get annoyed.
Yeah, I forget, because I think they has only season two come out or something like that, or like
I can't remember,
but yeah, I definitely knew they were making two and three. So yeah, if three's not out yet, then maybe that's annoying. Yeah, maybe.
What's that news?
I mean, it's not really news, but yeah. That's
the video game news.
What's going on in news?
I can talk about, I had some music news because I did go to that gig in Dublin. So that was, My Bloody Valentine, my favourite album. Yeah. I've only seen it once before because they only play like once every like 8 years or something. They decide to get together. And like, it's amazing. There's nothing else like it. You can't, I don't know, there's bands that like copied them that sound like them, but nothing that's anything close to being them. And then there's loads of great bands that are influenced by them,
right,
and of course influence them, but there's nothing actually like it, and obviously, and like, you were not going to get the full effect. I mean, you can turn up the stereo, but you're not going to get the full effect that you do. And I know, you know, they do the thing of handing out the earplugs as you go in and everything, but oh my god, it's loud. It's like, I looked like afterwards and someone measured it was over 100 decibels for nearly 2 hours.
What?
It's so loud, it's like standing by a jet engine. It's insane.
That seems a bit much.
It's, I mean, they're famous, absolutely famous for it. Obviously I had earplugs that I bought online and I had ready and stuff, but you know, you get the full effect by taking them out, right? So I was like, but I knew, like, they always do, like, the final song they play, they do like a noise section, which is the loudest thing. And it varies in length. This time it was about 6 minutes, it has been longer in the past, but it was like, you just feel it in your body basically, because it's so, but like, it's on purpose, because it just, you know, it's just something about their music, right? That intense volume, like the combination of it, and then like the prettiness of it or something, and the way it washes over you is so... I can't imagine what it'd be like hearing, like, I don't know, metal music at that volume, like Slayer, or it would be so intense. But because of the nature of My Bloody Valentine and the way it works, that kind of wall of sound, wash, shoegaze thing, which they basically invented... It works.
Who was it that we went to see at the Roundhouse?
Yeah, they're very inspired. Yeah, the Horrors, yeah. That was not as loud as I expected, because I was warning you guys that it was going to be
loud. Yeah, I mean, it had moments, it wasn't, for sure, where it was just sound. You know what I mean?
They definitely
went into that territory.
Yeah, I think they're definitely inspired. Obviously, they're doing their own thing and stuff, but there's nothing quite like the OG. And they're getting older. I mean, they're like... mid-60s at this point, so I don't think they probably can't do it forever. But yeah,
like, really, that wow, okay,
yeah, because it's late 80s, right? They really did their stuff. And they put out, famously, only put out one album since 1991 or something, which, of course, was super hyped up, and then it was really, really good. It's like, oh, they did another masterpiece. And it was interesting in the set list, because they played a lot of stuff from, like, before their big album, Loveless, like, from the 80s, and then Loveless, and then, but they mixed in plenty, like, four tracks, at least, from the quote-unquote new album from, like, 2013 or whatever it was, and it fit in perfectly. I mean, they're great. Anyway,
yeah, you see, that's weird, because I didn't actually have any knowledge of them being, I know the 2013, you know, that sort of era anyway, they, you know, because that was, there was a quite a few bands like that around at that time, right? And it's, am I getting really confused? I think I always get them really confused.
You're probably, there's another band with a similar name that's like an emo band
maybe that's who I'm thinking of.
It's not them. Yeah. It's not Bullet for My Valentine. It is not.
Right. Yes. It's no.
It is My Bloody Valentine.
I think I. Because that would have been mid 2000s, I guess, when they were about.
Yeah, that was around emo time. That's like Fall Out Boy kind of time, right? And sort of thing.
I think I'm mixing the two. You're right.
Yeah. Okay. So if you don't know this band, guys, it's my favorite. Check it out. You might not like it at all. It's quite niche, but if you want to have your ears bleed, I am a bit worried that I have marginally damaged my hearing, but it'll be okay. It'll be fine. I went to another gig this Saturday, The Hives, you know them.
Oh, yeah.
With Ho. Oh, yeah. And I wore the ear protection the entire gig because I was like, well, I'm not doing that.
Oh, my God, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, but that was pretty fun. I went with Ho. They were really good. But it was quite funny because obviously the front man of The Hives is a real showman type thing. And, you know, where he's doing a lot of crowd work, and he's jumping up and down and like all that, and hyping up the crowd and doing lots of banter and stuff in between the songs. And it's like the exact opposite. I think My Bloody Valentine, they said about 10 words total.
Right. Yeah.
They said, yeah, this, I guess tonight's for Manny. Tonight's for Manny. And then somebody screamed louder. He was like, louder, all right. And at the end, Belinda said, thank you for coming. Yeah.
Oh my God, The Hives. Yeah, that would have been that's a good one.
The Hives, yeah, it was good. It was just like, I'd seen my favorite band in the world, so it couldn't quite match up.
Yeah,
to that,
I know.
But it was still fun. Yeah, it did, and also me and Ho were talking afterwards, and it had the effect that The Hives is like the indie period, but like those crowds are the worst.
Sure.
Yeah. They're just indie fans, just from that time period especially.
Yeah.
They're just the absolute worst.
I think that's probably why I have a sort of hatred of gigs to an extent. It's I want to just listen to the music. I don't want to interact.
I mean, that was one advantage of My Bloody Valentine, is no one could possibly be talking over the music.
Sure.
Which is quite helpful.
Yeah, maybe that's why I've never really enjoyed them, because you just end up with that crowd with the sort of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, those arsehole crowd, yeah. Yeah. It definitely, I mean, obviously the crowd is related to the band. Well. And there's something about that certain, you know, that certain type of music that's great that attracts certain type of people.
Anyway. I mean, it's not like I would call Hives fight music, but it's
that's what I mean.
It's fight adjacent.
Yeah, exactly. That's not them, but
no, that's not them.
But that type of music attracts. I love Chelsea Dagger; it's the best. But
Chelsea,
also,
those days, Brent. You mean indie music that can be repeated by football fans? Is what you mean?
Yes, that's what I mean.
Da 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 da
da da. Exactly what I mean. I saw Jack White just did a halftime show at one American football game. You know how they're incredibly short, so he did like a 7-minute set, on a massive stage, and so he did "That's How I'm Feeling" from the new record, And then he the second song in his 7-minute set was like Hello Operator. I was like, hang on, sweet. This is a deep cut.
Yeah, yeah.
But like midway through Hello Operator, because it was in Detroit, I think that was the reason. He just brings on Eminem.
Oh,
rap through Hello Operator.
Oh, man. Oh, that's amazing.
And then does Seven Nation Army. So that's on YouTube. So check out 7 minutes of, yeah. Quite funny.
Oh, I've got to hear that.
Yeah, check that out.
Operator.
Right, that's the music section.
Whoop whoop.
Time for the video game section, which is the podcast.
Video games.
What's going on?
I don't know. Nintendo probably put some music on the Nintendo music app.
On the Nintendo official music app.
I don't know. Nintendo have bought Bandai Namco Singapore to add to their rather small set of studios that they're sort of external to their normal, like, art, you know, their big teams inside.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting choice because they haven't, like, they've supported a few of their products, but I don't think they've necessarily been like taken over the brunt of the work. Like, I guess you could. It wasn't them, I don't think, that was working on Smash Bros, for instance, alongside Sora, and presumably not Kirby Air Riders more recently. I don't think it's that part of Bandai Namco. They have helped with Splatoon 3 in the past, and more interestingly, they were behind the first version of Metroid Prime 4 before that got canned and rebooted by Retro. Interesting. So I guess they must be useful to them in some way, but I'm not entirely sure the track record is there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
maybe they
intend to invest and turn it into something.
Yeah, like, maybe they're probably useful to them as a support studio of some kind, like, you know, asset generation and things like that. Maybe they're really good at that. I wouldn't expect Nintendo to buy. There's not like they go around and buy everyone like that they work with. They're not Microsoft, so it's, or Embracer or any of those. It's just an interesting choice. Yeah, they must. And they don't do it very often. So there's that. I don't think we'll hear anything of that ever again. They're now called Nintendo Studios Singapore. So maybe if you see that turn up on a game, you might realize. No, maybe it won't turn up on a game because Nintendo are rubbish at crediting people.
Okay.
Time Splitters Rewind, woo, is out in early access. I'm going to give this a look at some point.
Rewind.
Yeah, this project, this has been in the making for about 12 years, this project.
So I thought this was like Time Splitters 1, but it's not, right? It's all
no, it's a full. The project is to try and encapsulate everything Time Splitters.
Okay, cool.
But rework it with modern controls and modern sensibilities. So it's technically the same games, but they may play a bit different, right? It's not going to be Time Splitters because they're trying to do it in modern engines and have support for modern, you know, keyboard and mouse, for instance.
Because Time Splitters felt very kind of GoldenEye, like,
right? Yeah,
Perfect Darky, right?
It's very much way. Like that. Yeah, it still has the like hold R to weirdly precise aim thing, right? It's a slightly awkward game, but that's what gives it its charm in its own way. And I think all three of the Time Splitters were like that. I don't really have much experience with Time Splitters 1, to be honest.
No, me either.
Because it wasn't.
I played 2 a lot because it was on the Xbox.
Yeah, 2 was great. 3 was pretty good. I mean, very good. Yeah, it was very good, but it wasn't too great. 2 is amazing. It's just, standout classic. 3 went heavy on the story stuff. And while you might argue that that was better constructed than Time Splitters 2's single player content, I don't know, something about the almost thrown together charm of Time Splitters was lost. I don't know how to describe it, but there was something went missing. And also, they didn't release Time Splitters 3 on GameCube, which always annoyed me. You know, Time Splitters 2 on GameCube was excellent. And then for some reason they didn't bother with Time Splitters 3. I wonder if it didn't fit on a GameCube disc and were just like, yeah, whatever.
Maybe.
But it came out on Xbox. which is where I played it. Anyway, yeah, I'm interested about this because a lot of the effort is obviously around the multiplayer stuff and the bot matches, right? Because that was a lot of that game was just bot matches and deathmatch and that kind of stuff. So the focus is there. But the Time Splitters 1 campaign is playable now, apparently in full. I don't think that was much of a campaign. I think that was almost like multiplayer challenges, Time Splitters 1. Kinda. I don't know. I don't know enough about it. So I'm going to have a look anyway. It looks kind of cool. I just want to know how it plays, really. Yeah, how does it feel? They have said it's got it's early access. They know it's buggy still, but that's progress.
Hmm.
Which is nice. In other news, we've got some Xboxy and Microsofty stuff. Microsoft have reportedly not planned for all the massive RAM shortages going on right now.
Thanks
to friggin' AI. God damn it.
AI buying up all the RAM.
But shouldn't that mean Microsoft were one of the ones buying the RAM?
I mean, indirectly.
Just not the Xbox part of Microsoft.
Indirectly, yeah. That's exactly, because they have a massive stake in OpenAI, don't they?
Yeah, that's right.
That's kind of odd. But also, if that is true and they were aware of it, that's not exactly against the current trends of Microsoft, right? It's like we'll chew off Xbox's ear and spit it back out to feed AI. That's kind of what they've been doing recently. So, yeah, seems like that. What does this mean for Xbox? Well, we don't really know. We don't know if that impacts production of the Series X's. It probably does. Does this mean they're just not going to make more of them? Maybe. That's on the cards, right? They're not selling super well anymore. And they're not...
do you think they'll shut down production of the existing stuff before they create a new one or put out a new one?
Yeah, I get the feeling they'll probably slow down. Well, I don't know. It's either that or they raise the price, right? Those are the two things that can happen.
They've already done that, haven't they?
Yeah, they did it pretty recently as well. The price will have to go up again to keep it in manufacturing. One of those two things will happen. It feels like I would just slow down production at this point. I don't know, because they just don't care, right? Microsoft don't care, so I don't think they'll... I just don't think they'll support Xbox to carry on manufacturing at a good price point. I can't see it. The only thing that this might leave them in the lurch for is development and or production of whatever the next console is. That puts a bit of a question mark, or maybe I assume they're nowhere near manufacturing that thing yet, but if they are, then that's a problem. So that's happening.
Apparently, a 64 gig of DDR5 RAM costs more than a PS5 currently.
That's insane.
I know.
I clearly bought it just the right time.
It's never a good time. One thing, it's crypto, and then it's freaking AI.
Yeah, it's either the GPUs are going to catch you, or something else will catch you. I heard there's something wrong in the SSD space as well. It's probably somewhat related to RAM, right?
Probably.
The flash chips, the NAND flash. I think those have got expensive as well for some reason. SSDs aren't in a great space price-wise either. What does this all mean for the Valve Steam? Is it called the Steam Machine?
Yeah.
It's called the Steam Machine, right. Yeah, what does this mean for the Steam Machine? Is it going to be pricey because of... You know, they probably don't have the market weight that these guys do.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know the pricing of the Steam Machine. I'm sure they want to price it to be not... with no losses for Valve, right, at cost, probably, roughly. Sure. Obviously, they'll have some economies of scale versus completely doing it yourself, obviously, because they'll be able to buy in bulk, but it won't be as bulk as a... It's not as super custom as a PS5 or something.
No, sure.
Yeah, so maybe it'll be okay, but it'd be a bit weird if it varied, right? It's like suddenly RAM costs come down and then your Steam Machine costs... Because it's already weird that the PS5 costs kind of more than it did when it launched, right? That sort of stuff is already weird.
It's all unique. It's never happened before. Like, yeah. This generation is more expensive now than it was before. To the point where, like, PlayStation actually... The other thing that happened with PS5 is they've shrinkflated it recently as well.
So you get the same... There's a new SKU of the base PS5, which is less good, right?
Yeah, because, not in the launch one. What they've done is they've gone back to the launch spec.
Oh, okay.
Like, so the launch spec came out and it had, like... It didn't have a terabyte in it, right? It had one of those, like, 800 and something gig drives, which actually ended up with about 600 usable.
Yeah,
right, okay. Which isn't brilliant to begin with.
Not with the size of games. I mean, it'd be fine if it wasn't for games being massive, right?
Exactly. But then they fixed that at some point and put in a full terabyte drive in later models. Again. And now they're going back to the original size.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to put the price up again because of the NAND flash problem. So, yeah, it's horrible. They don't try and loss lead these things in the way that they used to. They have to kind of pay for themselves, these devices now. Not quite sure why that is, because I don't know. In theory, the growth or the market apparently isn't as big as it once was in terms of, like, people buying these things, probably because they're so expensive, right? The speed of purchases in the video game space is down, apparently, overall. But the market must be massive, right, overall now. The number of people actually in video games in general, it's probably the biggest it's ever been. But maybe that's the problem. Maybe they've saturated. Maybe we finally hit that point where, like, video games is, like, anyone who's going to play them, it plays them. Which, of course, investors love. So there's that. What else is going on? Xbox had a partner showcase. A couple of games of interest come out of this. One of them that caught my eye is Zoopunk, which I took one little look at and thought, this looks fairly familiar. Where have I seen this before? There's an anthropomorphic bunny rabbit called Ray going on some kind of... This is a sequel to Fist, isn't it? Turns out, it's a prequel to Fist. So, for those who don't know, Fist, or otherwise known as Forged in Shadow Torch, was a Metroidvania game made by Chinese Tai Games that I played last year, and I thought it was pretty good. Was it last year or 2 years ago? Anyway, I've played it, and I thought I really liked it. It had a couple of gnarly bugs in it that I don't think ever got fixed, but as a sort of combat Metroidvania, I thought it was pretty good. Pretty good one of those. I think it flew under too many people's radars because actually it's a pretty solid game overall. They're revisiting that universe but this time not as a 2D Metroidvania, but this time as a more of a Devil May Cry character action game. And I think it looks pretty good. I've got to say, like, the animation looks perhaps a little bit stiff, but then it looks pretty faithful for how Fist's animation was, so I'm not necessarily marking it down for that. It's consistent, at least. I think it looks pretty good.
Cool, I guess.
Character action games, man. That aren't Froms or Souls-likes.
Right, yeah, that's the thing. It's kind of weird how that such a niche genre took over that whole rest of the
It took
genre.
Over everything.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
I mean, I guess we got Stellar Blade, like, in that space relatively recently, but there aren't...
Black Myth, I guess,
It's Souls-ish. I think it's more... It's kind of straddling.
They freaking love that game in China. I mean, obviously it's their game.
Yeah,
but
it's huge.
Freaking love it.
It's absolutely huge. Digital Foundry love it as well because it's a ridiculous performance test.
Sure.
So I don't know. I thought that was interesting. Keeping an eye on that. But in potentially much bigger news, Vampire Survivors is getting a sequel. But it's not. I mean, but it's not a survivors game anymore. It's vampire crawlers. They're making a dungeon crawler roguelike with deck building mechanics.
So they're riffing off Slay the Spire instead,
I guess. Yeah, but hopefully its trademark insanity can carry over in some way. Hopefully that'll do. That'll also be massive. Maybe they'll sell it for £4 again. I don't know. That's all I got for news, to be honest.
Zach, do you want to say about the Metroid? There's been some footage of Metroid.
Right, yeah. I'm gonna turn off my media blackout for the podcast. It's fine. Let's do this.
Well, Zach, you just say what you want to say.
I don't know if I want to say anything about it, especially.
Well, I just think it's a fake out and that people are worried for over nothing. But there you go.
I can see it many ways. Like, I can see a tree of different ways this could go, and it's like there's several bad ways it could go.
Oh my God, you're giving
me. And there's several ways that are totally fine.
I don't know what you're talking about, but this conversation is giving me Metal Gear Solid 2 vibes.
Basically,
well, not that much of a fake out.
Okay. It's very simple. It's very simple. It's early footage early in the game, presumably. And Samus meets an annoying side character who then follows her.
She meets an MCU character, is what we're basically talking about.
So yeah. I'd actually heard about this, and I saw the conversation tending that this was actually faked. Is it not?
It's real, but I still think it's that won't be the game. I think.
I mean, let's hope.
It's part of the game, but I think they're not that stupid, and they know that the atmosphere of Metroid is important.
Well,
being lonely and tackling it yourself.
The fact that they put this in at all is still weird. Like, I mean, obviously, the Federation is kind of an important part of the game at this point in the story of Metroid Prime, I guess, after 3.
Kinda, yeah.
But like. I don't know if it's just the, you know, it's fine if you're going to occasionally have other characters exist in Metroid, but why the MCU dialogue? Like, that's the bit that doesn't work.
It's quite odd.
Especially because it feels in some ways like it does the weird, like, anachronism things where it's like, why is this guy talking about working in a cubicle? It's like, it's a Federation soldier. I mean, he's like an engineer or whatever, so he's not like a soldier, but he's talking about working in a cubicle next to Dave or whatever, and it's like, cubicles in the Federation exist still? Like,
I mean, I guess we don't know a lot about the Federation and world in general.
It's because it's creepy, Marvel, is that what you're worried?
Yeah.
I see. Well, okay. I still think it's a fake out. I don't. I mean, I don't think he'll last very long. I don't think he'll die or anything, but I don't know.
Yeah.
The trouble is that
they'll separate him, because it's like, did they look at other M and thought there wasn't? Yeah, all the talking. That was a good idea, right?
Yeah. Well, at least it's not Samus talking.
He seemed more like a character from like this Clone Wars cartoons or something like that. He seemed like one of the squad from like the Bad Batch or something, like the techie guy.
He feels too cheese.
He's a bit too cheese. But of course, Samus doesn't speak, right? Doesn't speak to him, which is kind of weird.
That would be the double fake out if, like, because the thing that other people were slightly annoyed about is just like, up to this point of showing the trailers for this game, they hadn't showed this at all, but they had shown this kind of part of the game before, but they'd sort of cut around him, basically.
Around it, right. So you're worried that like this is actually it, but I still think this isn't it.
Well, I don't think it's it, but yeah. I think, like, I mean, there's people have seen like a menu that shows like a list of characters that you're going to interact with, or like, and you know, it's got blank spaces or whatever because it's people you haven't met yet, and he's like one of the 5 Federation people in this list,
right?
Which, you know, could imply he's as much of a fifth of this game.
Like, it could be that you're around people as much as Master Chief is around Marines, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Yeah. But actually, if you think about Halo, it's not that much. Right?
Yeah, but it's a different thing. Like, that's not actually a problem in Halo. You kind of, like, and the Marine, you know, it's a different vibe completely.
Yeah. The other problem that I have, which is just, like, another case of, like, why, how did no one perceive this to be a dumb idea? It's like, this guy is clearly for the tutorial. If he doesn't stick around for very long, he's at least going to be the tutorial. Maybe he will last longer than that afterwards. But like, he's the one talking because he's like talking to Samus. But he's like, he knows who Samus is, and yet he's explaining these really obvious things that Samus obviously does all the time because she's like the best solo bounty hunter in the entire universe. And he's like, "Hey, Samus, why don't you shoot that thing?" And it's like, what do you think he was going to do?
Oh my god! Yeah, wouldn't you just be a little bit? Wouldn't you sort of be in awe rather than telling her what?
Well,
to do?
He is as well, but like, he still then rambles on about everything you're doing in a way which is like, yes, it's a tutorial, but like, Samus doesn't need a tutorial. The player needs a tutorial, but you couldn't hide it any other way.
But they did this so much better in Prime 1, like, just by, like, the scanner was your tutorial.
Well, yeah, sure.
You could scan a thing and it would say, oh, by the way, do this.
But people don't read any longer. You need to have a Marvel MCU character quiff it at you to tell you what to do.
No.
Alarm bells, alarm bells.
Oh, man, why did... Okay, I'm actually glad you told me this, because this sucks. I don't like any part of this.
I still think it won't be around very much. But
I'm not necessarily against the concept of the radio buddy, but like, or even the sidekick character, but not here.
A radio, but I would prefer a radio buddy, like in, I don't know, BioShock or Deus Ex or whatever, than someone who's actually able to interact in combat or not.
Well,
isn't weird.
I mean, I guess it depends how they manage that. Like, is it, as long as it's not a fucking escort mission at any point, like, as long as he can't actually die and he just like does animations in the background that have no actual impact on the fight or whatever.
Yeah, we shall see. I still have hope that they're not that dumb.
Yes,
because that seems like, if you're going to make a Metroid game, it's not like they've never made one before either. That was good. So,
and then it's like, if it turns out they have screwed this up in some way, how much worse was the original version?
Yeah, that got cancelled.
Yeah, will we ever find out? I mean, there was one of the negatives about Metroid Prime 3 was that there was more talking, there was more interaction, like, generally when you found a new planet, right, there would be a new element to it, there'd be something else said, or I don't know why Retro would look at that and go, yeah, let's do more of it, and then but then in a way it's been so long since Prime 3, is it fair to assume that Retro Studios isn't the same Retro Studios, right?
I mean, like, probably, yeah.
Yeah,
sure. Have they had so much time away from Metroid that the Metroid guys aren't there anymore?
But you think, under the circumstances, after the last version by another developer being ditched by Nintendo, they'd be super on it to make it, like, you know, up to Nintendo's quality standards.
Yeah,
Metroid. But then that could be a Nintendo mandate in itself, right? It's like,
I'm
going to make it more accessible.
I don't know.
Easy mode.
The only thing that I want out of this game is none of this stuff. All I want is for the fucking Metroid and Prime stories to finish. Fucking no more goddamn phase on.
Right.
And ideally no more Metroids either, but you can't really get rid of those because it's the name of the game.
Yeah. Going back briefly to media, MCU, I watched Thunderbolts just now.
Okay.
Have you seen that, Rob?
No, I'm not. I'm quite behind.
It's quite good. I enjoyed it. I might even have liked it better than Fantastic Four, honestly. I think it's mainly because... Florence Pugh is just star power. She's just amazing in literally everything, and she's the main character in Thunderbolts. But it also has Julia Louis-Dreyfus is always good value in my mind. You know, Elaine from Seinfeld, she's great. It's quite fun that the MCU has got to a point where it's like actual comics, in that this happens quite a lot. I think I don't really read comics, but I think this happens a lot, that because they have like 50 years continuity, they can have a writer come in and do a limited series, which where they take a bunch of B characters, right? And then they tell a interesting story on a theme. And that's what this is in the MCU. They're all the B characters. It's like, because Florence Pugh is like Black Widow's sister, right? And then it's like the reject Captain America, Walker, whatever his name is, and like various, and the and her, the Black Widow's father, right, the old Red Guardian or whatever guy, David Harbour, and it's all the rejects basically, and it's like team of rejects, ragtag type of thing. But it has a theme, which is depression, which is an interesting theme for a superhero film, and I think it was pretty good. I like that they can make, you know, they're in under a circumstance where they can make weird things like this, and it can, you can make it work, just like comics.
I mean, that's,
which is kind of interesting.
Somewhat surprising that Disney put a film behind it.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? That's actually kind of reassuring, because
it is. It's kind of a risk.
I say
I
that,
suppose they.
I say that from someone who's somewhat falling off, right? And I was Mr. MCU to a degree, but like I don't know, the last few things I'm just like, you know what, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm
no,
be,
I'm totally
sure
with
be
you.
Asked anymore. Like,
there's various ones I've definitely missed quite a few, but like I think they're trying to get a grip. And so this one, I actually, and the other one, which is the safer bet, right, was Fantastic Four. And I thought that was pretty good, but that's much more safe kind of bet, like standard superheroes. They just, the trick with that one is it was just in a totally different universe, right?
Yeah.
Like alternate universe. So that, and then they're going to merge the worlds or whatever.
Yeah. There's bits of MCU that have been going well. Like I've watched the first two episodes of Ironheart.
All right.
Like, you know, one of the... side, like not Iron Man side characters, I guess.
Right.
I can't even remember what one she turned up in. I think it was one of the Spider-Man film or something. When I can't remember where she first turned up. But anyway, yeah, it just, I don't know. There's something about that show that kind of embodies like where things I think have been going wrong with MCU, where there's just doesn't feel coherent enough. And I know that's kind of like, I guess that's comics to some degree.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily feel gelled together, or that I'm supposed to assume things, or that I'm supposed to just go, hang on, how did, like, that this is now a thing. Like, I don't know, Ironheart, mild spoilers, I suppose, for the first end of the first episode of Ironheart, but like, she somehow makes an AI accidentally by scanning her brain with a laptop, and I'm like, that's one chunky ass laptop.
chunky ass laptop.
Like, there's like a power creep that's obviously happened in this thing in the world, but it's like, it's sort of part of everyday devices now to make any of this plausible.
Right.
Do you see what I mean? There's like,
yeah,
there's a bit of me that's like, I can suspend my disbelief so much, but now it's like, oh, someone in their bedroom can somehow build a top-notch AI. Like, how, like, Vision can just be made by a teenager. Like, what's going on here? Like, I don't. It's too much now. It feels too much, and too weird and too odd. And it's gone past the suspension of disbelief for me in a lot of cases. And that's wild, right? It's like,
yeah, I know. Given what they've built up and everything, and all the madness that's happened,
and in some ways, Ironheart is trying to be a bit more grounded, a bit more down to earth. It's not quite so crazy, and then it just has these little bits here and there where it's like, okay, this is quite out there. But
that would take me out for sure. Yeah, I think they're trying to pull it back together because it's like, obviously, they had a big plan and they had their big climax or whatever in the end game years and years ago. And then it's been like they've been trying to build something up since then. But it's a double problem of like they didn't have as much to work with in terms of the classic characters and stuff. And famously, their actual plan got all fucked up by real life, right?
Yep.
And the Jonathan Majors and everything. So they're trying to recover. But I think they're forming towards a plan of something.
I mean,
because
why
Thunderbolts, I don't know if you know, but it has an asterisk on the end of the name, Thunderbolts.
Yes, yeah. I know. That whole thing was very much not a spoiler. It just got like,
no.
They put it out there and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they did. And then, so they're going to put it all together. I mean, they're trying to play it safe because it's a big business investment, isn't it? So, like, they bring, obviously they've got Robert Downey Jr. back or whatever, and they're going to figure out how to do that, right? Mm. Because he'll be the way that they'll excuse that is because he's from another universe, right? He's Doctor Doom, absolutely, right? From the other universe. And but there'll be some reason why he looks exactly like Iron Man, right? Presumably. Yeah. I'm amazed
they didn't just recast Kang, or whatever his name was.
I don't know. It's still, but they'd already had him in, what was it, Loki and everything.
He was in Ant-Man.
I think people were getting, I know this is still a multiverse plot, but I think people were getting a bit of multiverse fatigue kind of audiences.
Yeah, I never thought they really made it work. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, it feels like, okay, endless possibilities. You could really do something with this. But even, like, Doctor Strange, with all its Sam Raimi goodness, like, the multiverse, the other universes were just kind of like, oh, now we're here. Like, it wasn't like, none of them mattered.
No. That's the danger, because it becomes like nothing matters, doesn't it, if you have infinite worlds.
The only one they stayed in for any length of time mattered, so they could do some dramatic deaths. That was...
Right, exactly.
Of characters you don't care about, because you've only just met them in this other universe, and it's like, ugh, it doesn't... Yeah, the multiverse... The way they've treated the multiverse cheapens things.
I agree. Like, and they kind of used it because for... They use that all that stuff they'd put together for Deadpool and Wolverine, which is, of course, a joke. Like, but they made
but
it
it's
all
great.
The, and that made it fun. Yeah. The fact that they were making fun of it is like, oh, a Goliath in the void or whatever is going to get us. And like, Deadpool looks at the camera and goes like, from Loki season 2, episode 3.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the only way you could use it or whatever. Or the fact that they had, what's his name, Chris Evans as Johnny Storm, get like obliterated or whatever.
But that's great.
It's, yeah. That's the only thing they could do with it at that point, because I think it didn't really work. Anyway, MCU. Thunderbolts, pretty good.
I mean, I know they've done one X-Men thing now, technically, with Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah, they're building up
to
that.
But it's like, I really want to know what they do with it, because the Fox X-Men films always felt like they had such potential and never quite landed.
X-2 was pretty good.
X-2 is the best of the lot. Oh, excluding Logan. Logan's fantastic, but... But yeah, X-2 is the only one of that whole series that really works. Like, the first one with James McAvoy, First Class. That's okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty
good.
That's
okay. Yeah.
But not superb. Like, yeah, it just feels like such a missed... The film, X-Men Universe, feels like just such a missed opportunity. And I'm not a huge X-Men fan. That's the thing. I didn't really like the original cartoon. I didn't really... I didn't super get into X-Men 95 or whatever they did recently, you know, the reboot.
Well, if you didn't like the cartoon originally, then you probably won't like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much aping it, but it's like there's a sort of, I don't know, there's a vibe thing, there's a vibe check doesn't sit with me. It's like, I kind of like the ideas behind it, just doesn't, maybe it's the format, maybe it's the quick, you know.
And I think for some kids, that was their thing, and my thing was like, I don't know, Spider-Man or something, like, I just wasn't into X-Men particularly.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like there's something there. We just haven't necessarily seen it yet.
Okay, we'll see what they do. But I'm not sure about bringing it back to games. I'm still not sure about them doing Wolverine. Obviously, it's ultra-violent, right? But, like, I don't see how that can be as successful as Spider-Man.
No. I mean, it's good to see Insomniac go and do something else.
Sure, but, I mean... It's still like Marvel superhero. It's not branching out that far.
Did you play? I haven't played Spider-Man 2, but did you play?
No, I still haven't played Spider-Man 2. I really like Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal game.
I don't know why that because it's probably pretty good. I've got a PS5, so it's ideal to play.
Yeah, that's the thing. You see, because I don't have a PS5. There was a bit of me that's just like, oh, I don't really want to play this until, I mean, now I can on PC, and I just haven't got around to it.
I just wasn't sure I could be bothered with the like Venom plotline and all that again and all that.
Mm.
But maybe, I'm sure they'll do a good. They did a good twist on it or whatever. I also find it weird how they changed the character model.
Yes, that actually winds me up. I think why would you do that? Like, I know, like, it's a tie-in to the Tom Holland and
Sony. He doesn't look that much like Tom Holland.
I mean, I guess he looks like Tom Holland.
Yeah, okay.
But no, I had no problem with the original model. Like, why not just?
No, it was good.
Like, I don't get it. I don't get why they did that. That's actually. That is kind
Must be Sony made them do it, right?
Oh yeah, Sony definitely like muscled their way into that. It's not even Tom Holland voicing it. That's why it's even weirder. Exactly. It's still Yuri Lowenthal.
Yeah, maybe I'll get around to Spider-Man 2 by the time the PS6 comes out.
And they'll do like a mega webbed edition or something.
Probably, yeah. But we should talk about games we've been actually playing, I guess.
I mean, maybe.
Maybe.
It's only the 409th time we've done it.
Should we do it another time? On a Monday?
On a Monday.
What have you been playing? Zach, what have you been playing?
Well, I guess I'll start with the one that I said I wasn't going to be playing, but I did. Played more Stationeers still.
Stationeers.
Yep.
Stationary.
I mean, I don't need to say too much more about it. It's just that, like, last time I mentioned I'd been doing the brutal starts on the different planets. So I'd basically done the three easy ones last time, and then this time I ramped it up to the medium one and the hard one, essentially. Well, there's technically two hard ones, but I only did one of them. Although in some ways the medium one was almost harder than the hard ones, because it's weird, like... The medium one is Mimas, which is it's like the moon, so it's a vacuum. But it still has ice, but it doesn't have water ice specifically. So you still have the oxygen ice, so you can still like chuck the oxygen ice on the floor and make a breathable environment. That part's still the same and easy. But because you don't have water ice, you then have to take the oxygen and volatile ice and burn it to make water. And the reason why it's weirdly hard is because it's still classed as an easy planet rather than the hard ones, which are hot planets, is what they call them, because they're the ones that don't have any ice. Because it's still technically got some ice, you don't get like the extra oxygen and water you get on the hot planets. So it's actually kind of difficult, because you really do have to like super rush to make the whole oxygen, hydrogen burning into water mechanism before your water runs out, because you don't have the extra water that you get from the hot planet version.
Right.
Which is kind of weird, but that's actually useful if you're doing what I was doing, is like going through them in order, because that's basically like the training version of learning how to set up the hydrogen burning for water system, because that's the only problem of that planet, whereas when you get to the hot planet, you're now dealing with, you have to do that because obviously there's no water ice again, but there's none of the other ices as well, so you're also having to do the whole how do you get any oxygen at all thing of either trade or growing plants. So I did the growing plants version and I managed it. I only nearly died like twice. It was fine. I nearly died immediately because I got like slightly overconfident about the waste tank in my suit. Because like the reason the waste tank is a problem is because when you're on a hot planet, the way that your suit keeps you cool is by basically taking the cold oxygen out of your oxygen tank and using that for cooling, and then just dumping it into your waste tank. So it basically means your waste tank fills up much, much quicker when you're in a hot environment. Uh-huh. And it's also full of like unused oxygen that you'll want to get back, because obviously you're in a situation where you don't have any extra oxygen to get work with. So what you actually have to do when you're doing the hot brutal start is you have to like immediately get the hydraulic pipe vendor machine so you can make extra tanks. So you can basically hot swap the tank for the waste tank for a fresh one before your original waste tank fills up.
Right.
And I got slightly overconfident on how much time I thought I could get away with like going around and mining and stuff, because you obviously have to mine all these resources immediately to be able to do that. So I nearly overfilled my waste tank and like died immediately from that.
So, hey, what? I mean, wouldn't you just open your waste tank up a little bit and just...
No, because that's the other trick of Vulcan, the volcano planet, is that the atmosphere is full of volatiles. So if you open your oxygen-filled waste tank, you explode.
Okay. You have an explosive poop tank. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. And obviously you also don't actually want to waste all that unused oxygen anyway, so you also want to keep it for resource purposes. But yeah, I did manage to eventually pull off that whole system of like making the greenhouse really fast and multiplying the potatoes until you actually have enough to make more oxygen than you're breathing and enough to turn into water as well. So I think I've solved all of the brutal starts. I mean, technically there's still Venus, which is much the same as Vulcan, except you don't get the volatiles in the atmosphere. So theoretically, you could vent your waste tank on Venus if you want. Mm. But also, because you don't have the volatiles in the atmosphere, you don't have the volatiles to burn to make the water for free, like you do on Vulcan.
Right, yeah.
So I think in Venus's case, that you can't even do the greenhouse method. You do just have to rush for trade, which in some ways, to me, just makes it seem like Venus is actually easier.
I mean, in a way, but surely there's a random element to that.
Yeah, you do still have the randomness of the trade to deal with, but it's a much less complicated system to, you know, build rapidly at the start of the game. The slightly different problem of Venus is because you don't have access to the volatiles in the atmosphere, and the atmosphere is like a constant temperature rather than on Vulcan, where it varies during the day and gets extra hot, like steel making hot on Vulcan. On Venus, you don't get that extra heat, so you don't get free steel. But then if you need to heat up the furnace, that means you need to burn oxygen and volatiles that you need to get from somewhere. Because you don't have extra of either of those. So you have to, like, if you put oxygen into the furnace, it off-gas... I mean, if you put gold into a furnace, it off-gases oxygen, because there's oxygen trapped in gold. And then if you put cobalt into the furnace, that has volatiles trapped into it, so you can like get volatiles and oxygens out of specific types of ores, and then that will cause the furnace to heat up more than the atmospheric temperature, and then you can smelt steel. So it's like, it's another trick, but I don't think in general, since you're still having to just get to steel to make a trade pad, I don't think Venus is actually as difficult as Vulcan, probably. Not that you couldn't just do that on Vulcan anyway. You could just make a trade pad. Doing it the greenhouse way is purely optional if you're feeling more fancy. So I did that. And that station is.
Your goatee demands it.
Yeah.
That's definitely. I've got this fancy beard. I've got to build this fancy solution to match.
You've got to get far too many potatoes. Get all the achievements that talk about Mark Watney. I actually don't have the last one of those. There's three achievements for the Mark Watney experience. Basically, you have the kill a potato plant by the atmosphere going wrong.
Right.
You have the survive for an entire month eating only potatoes.
Right.
And you have the one that I haven't got, which is technically a secret achievement, but I've seen the text of it. But I don't know exactly how it triggers, which is like cause an explosion in hydroponics. So it's like, you just have to like accidentally set fire to something that then explodes inside the part of your base that you're growing the potatoes in.
Or could you like just vent some Vulcan atmosphere in there and then...
Yeah, probably. And then accidentally turn a vent around the wrong way and just send the hot volatiles directly into your farm. So yeah, that's station is. I think I've successfully done everything I wanted to do, so maybe I will finally stop playing that now.
I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah. And then the other things I did, well, I did get two more achievements in No Man's Sky because I finished the permadeath run.
Oh, nice.
Not that there was much to that. I mentioned it before when I'd like temporarily stopped playing it to do like expeditions or whatever, but like I was right at the end of the permadeath run where all I had to do was just warp around until the game gives you all the runes or whatever for the start, for the teleport Stargate system, and then you just teleport to the end of the game, basically the center of the galaxy. So I did that and got it was nice because I got both the achievements for permadeath and survival, because technically when you're in a permadeath save, it's also survival as well, because right, survival is actually like original No Man's Sky, where you had like shitty inventory space.
Oh. Hmm. Was it non-expandable or?
No, it's like all the stack sizes are way lower. Like in current No Man's Sky, like stack size is like 9,999, but in original No Man's Sky it was like 250.
Right.
So it really sucked. That was why your inventory was always constantly full in original No Man's Sky. But yeah, I got through that. So I got those two achievements. I've only got one more achievement to get in No Man's Sky, and it's the one where she's just, you have to be in an extreme environment for a long time, which is just like, that's no fun at all.
No.
Can't even really grind that.
I mean, I guess you could like get like the suit powers for staying, you know, that mitigate.
Well, yeah, I have like the S-class triple upgraded environments for all the different environments, but even that only lasts like 10 minutes or something. And I need to stand in those environments for like another 4.5 hours or something.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah. Even considering this is like my longest save and this is the most time I've ever spent playing this game, I still have like another 4.5 hours to go on this achievement of just being in hostile environments. But then again, that's because like, when I made this save, because I already knew how No Man's Sky worked, it's like I basically never went to those kinds of planets because you don't need to. Like, once you understand the concept of, like, you can go to, like, a blue star system once, mine up some of the blue material, and then use the stupid refiner tricks to just multiply it forever. Hmm. Like, I never need to go and mine blue or green or red star metal, because I just multiply them out of the refiners. So I'm never on those extreme temperature planets to have that effect. So that timer never goes up.
Yeah. And that's not cumulative across your profile. That's in a save, is it?
I'm not entirely sure. Like, I think it's... Yeah, it must only be the save, because I think it triggers when you get the milestone. So it's like the milestone pop-ups.
Ah, I see. Yeah, gotcha.
So, yeah. There is one thing that I could theoretically do, which would make sense to waste that kind of time, which is, like, if I find a planet with an extreme environment and that has the buried salvage containers for Corvette ship parts, because like if I want to build a cool looking Corvette, need those ship parts. So I could just, if I find the right planet with an extreme environment and the Corvette ship parts on it, I could just fly around and grind those for several hours.
Yeah,
I mean, it's still not very interesting. Might be a podcasty kind of thing. Listen to something while I'm doing that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd want to. It's stuff like that is like, is one of the reasons I kind of just put No Man's Sky down. It's just like, that sounds neat, but that's a lot of time.
I mean, it's not like you need to do any of that stuff, especially. I guess the Corvettes, you do kind of have to grind those parts unless you want to spend a lot of money. But even then, you can only buy the basic ones. And the Corvettes have the same weird system as the skeletons have, where you can trade like parts you don't want for parts you do want, but it's like probability based on value. So like if you put in like several crap pieces, you like get a 10% chance of getting a good piece, or if you put in like a huge pile of crap pieces, like 50 or something, you get 100% chance of getting a good piece, but then you have to have those crap pieces to do that.
Right. Yeah. Slightly, not a great trade up rate.
No, it is a kind of sucky system. You might as well just go and grind the random loot containers and hope that you get the cool bits instead. And then if you don't, then you'll have a big pile of crap ones to trade. But then, you know, that's just a big grind. Other things that I played. I finished my bit trip track in Rift of the Necrodancer and uploaded that.
Right, yeah.
So that exists. Although, nice. Annoyingly, like, I think I have to subscribe to my own workshop item to be able to see the high score table.
Oh, that's kind of funny.
Because obviously when I'm looking at it in my game, it's literally the local save. Because it's like, it's not, it hasn't been through the workshop essentially to be able to turn into like the online compatible version.
Yeah, I can see why that would be.
So yeah, I don't know if anyone's played it or anything because I haven't remembered to do that yet. But then I also started, and I don't know if I'm going to finish this one. I started making a riff track for Skydeck. Because that was my classic.
Yeah.
I made that in Stepmania. Hmm. I mean, yeah, Stepmania at the time. That's what it was called.
Yeah, I remember. But yeah, that.
I made that song in that track editor, and I was like, "Let me do this in Rift. Why not?" But I don't know if I'll finish that. It's like kind of that track is kind of too repetitive. I feel like it doesn't really go anywhere. And I was finding trouble, like finding interesting bits of the track to pick out.
Maybe unless you can, like, you do a little rough edit yourself and like splice the various parts of Skydeck together.
Oh yeah, I suppose you could have the like the other versions.
Yeah,
yeah. But yes, I started making that.
You can watch a video of us playing through Sonic Adventure on the Happy Side YouTube channel.
You sure can. And I guess minor correction from a long time ago, the Shovel Knight DLC pack does have a free song. It's the title screen song. Because I didn't think it did, but I hadn't actually looked at the store page correctly. It's like, oh, it does have one free song. Although it kind of sucks that they didn't, because the title screen and probably all the rest of the songs that are in that pack, they're just loops, so they just fade out. And it's like, oh, that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
they didn't make a little ending or anything for them.
Right, so they're just the soundtracks?
Yeah, the original versions.
Right, okay.
Yeah, they're not remakes or anything.
That's a little bit of a shame. Because they did when they did the Shovel Knight pack for Just Shapes and Beats, it's like those were some dope remixes.
I mean, it's possible that those ones are in there as well, I guess, because I haven't seen all of the tracks, obviously, because I haven't had the DLC. I've only seen the one title screen track. But yeah, that's the minor correction. And then, relatedly, I went back for like a couple of runs of Crypt of the Necrodancer, because I was just like, it's been a long time since I played this, let's go back to Crypt.
Oh, I bet that didn't went well.
Well, the thing is, like, presumably because I've played a lot of Rift, I feel like I'm better at keeping the beat, but I'm not actually better at the game because Crypt is still fucking bloody impossible.
How did you go into it? Did you like think like, oh, I'm just going to start with a different character and like this will be how I relearn the game? So you get
no, I just went in with basic, like straight full, like start from the start full run mode with regular cadence and try and relearn it that way. But just like, and I only managed to get to like World 2 a couple of times.
I know, that game is so hard.
I definitely have forgotten some of the like attack patterns of stuff where it's like, how did I die exactly just then?
Yeah.
Something happened. And then the last thing I played, slightly more importantly, I suppose, because it's a relatively new release, because my Game Pass still hasn't expired.
Woo!
I went and played Power Wash Simulator 2!
Wow.
Brilliant. You get to find out the continuing story.
Yeah, exactly. It does, in fact, have a continuing story, which I suspect might be about birds, not cats this time. I mean, the cats are still there, but birds, I'm seeing a lot of birds in the distance in the sky, and I'm like, oh, is this what like the cats were? We just get these weird trails of cats wandering around in the previous game.
Birds.
But yeah.
They're much less suspicious.
Well, sort of, yeah. But you still have the previous mayor's cat still, and two additional cats that will just like show up in every mission so you can pet them for like no reason.
Aww.
As you do.
Oh,
but yes, now you've got Power Wash Simulator 2, and as I speculated when they first announced this, when we were talking about it on the podcast, it's like they were never going to do it, but I was inevitably going to be disappointed by the fact that it's like not any more simulatory.
No,
because it's not that kind of game, obviously.
No.
It's like the real casual, lazy, like simple game where like obviously they weren't going to make a real simulator, but I still feel like they could have put in like some small elements of simulationness and it would have still worked. Because the thing I always said was just like, obviously for a power washing game, they just should have simulated like the runoff a bit. Like when you're cleaning something, you should clean it from the top down because the runoff should clean the bottom part somewhat. Like that would have been a nice small addition to make that would make it slightly more simmy and slightly more tactical, I suppose, in your approaching of a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, or like, yeah, so things could just, yeah, just some sort of dripping, drippiness would be like, I mean, it could look cool as well.
Yeah, it could look cool. But unfortunately, the one major thing that they have changed, which I like found really annoying because it's like this change kind of ruins the game in some ways, is like they made soap free and on a cooldown rather than having to buy it. And from a game design prospect, it like I understand why they made that change, because no one ever would buy the soap because you're always saving up the money to buy the better sprayers.
Right, yeah, I see what you mean.
You're always saving the money to buy the pressure washers.
So what did the soap do?
So you never spend the money on the soap.
Does it just speed up the process?
Well, the soap basically makes it so that it takes less pressure to get rid of harder dirt, I guess. So, like, you'd spray the soap on the hard patches and then you could still get it off with a lower pressure stream.
Softens it up a bit.
Yeah. So, in the original game, you had to buy it and then it was, like, it only lasted for, like, a little bit and then that was it. So now they've made it free on a cooldown. But the problem with that is that, like, it solves the like, saving your money problem, but then because it's now free, it becomes the only option, like becomes like the perfect solution to every problem. So it removes all the tactics from the game. Like you can still do it the old way where you're like, oh, I'm going to spray this wall. And then you start spraying across a wall or something with like the low pressure nozzle. But then as soon as you find a bit of dirt where it's like this low pressure nozzle can't get rid of that, you could like switch to the higher pressure nozzle and then precisely aim and chip away at that hardier bit of dirt, or you could just cover it with soap and then that solves the whole problem.
Right, yeah.
It's just like that's, you've kind of taken all the tactics out of all the different nozzles because you only need the soap nozzle and the lowest pressure nozzle and then that'll solve all the problems.
That seems weird. Like, shouldn't there be a way of like, or shouldn't it be like a multi-step process in some way? Like, you know, I need to soap this up and then use a high pressure one because it's still that hard. Or...
Well, I mean, admittedly, I'm halfway through the game and maybe that will happen in like the later levels. Maybe there is like a super hard version of dirt that even the soap can't get in one go.
Obsidian dirt.
But yeah, it's like, as soon as I realized that the soap was just on a cooldown, it's like, oh, this has kind of solved all the problems. As soon as I run across an even slightly harder patch of dirt, I'm like, well, time for soap. Time to just soap everything. It's like, it's not even worth finding out where the hardier parts of the dirt are or anything. You just cover the entire thing with soap.
If only it was that easy.
Yeah. If only soap was not an environmental disaster. That you can just use it that liberally. I mean, there is one achievement on one of the levels for covering every possible part of it in soap. Luckily, it's not a very big thing. It's just like a car, basically.
Is the achievement called Foam Stars? Hey-o!
No, it's called, like, Doggy Bath, because it's a dog
doggy bath.
But yeah, I played about half of that game, I guess. It is still exactly as mindless as the first one, only possibly even more so now, once you figure out the tactic.
But in a
good way. I mean, the one other thing that they added, which is sort of cool, I suppose, is the surface cleaner, where it's like a, I guess it's like a rotating mop type thing. It like has a circular head that you push against a surface and then it cleans it directly. And it's like essentially infinitely powerful, so you can just cut through all the at any grade without having to soap it or anything.
So it's like a buffer kind of thing?
Or? Yeah, like a buffer, essentially. But then obviously that's only usable in certain situations because it's like you can't reach very far with it, unlike a water spray that you can reach quite far, especially with the extendable nozzles or whatever. it's mostly useful for like the floor or like roofs if you happen to be able to get up on top of a roof to do it.
Right. Buff that roof.
And, you know, one of the levels has an abseiling, like, swing thing to cut the cleanest billboard.
That's kind of funny.
They weirdly give you, like, in the first game, they had the, like, scaffolding for when you were doing tall things. Because you have, like, ladders and you have a and then for the taller stuff, you have the scaffold, where it's like a freestanding, like, several tiers of platform basically that you can stand on and you can move it around. But now they also for some reason give you a scissor lift as well, and it's just like, that's just like the scaffold but like more complicated for no reason.
Right,
because you have to manually like move it up and down.
Yeah, shouldn't there be like some levels where it's just like you don't just get access to all of your stuff, and it's like no, you've got to use the scissor lift here because it's annoying.
Well, again, yeah, that's like the other way they could have made the game more complicated is to actually limit you in some way. Even the nozzles, I mean, there's achievements for doing like only use the red nozzle for this whole level or whatever, and it's like, I mean, that's fine for an achievement, but like the game doesn't force you to do it. There's no level where, well, at least maybe there is in the later game, but there hasn't been any level so far where it's just like the person calling you up is like, and don't use any soap, I don't like the environmental impact of soap or whatever.
Sure.
Maybe that'll come up.
It makes sense.
Yeah. But it hasn't.
But maybe they don't want to because, I don't know, the zen-ness of the game was
exactly.
What everyone
said. That's why I said it's like, they weren't going to make it more of a simulator because that was not the kind of game it actually was.
Yeah.
Because much like the word literal, simulator doesn't actually mean simulator. And that was all I played.
What about you, Rob? What have you been playing?
Well, Zach and I continue to bash our heads against Full Metal Furies.
We got quite a lot of it done.
Yeah,
really.
There's one thing left that we know of anyway that is giving us a real headache. We don't really understand.
I mean, I'm not sure we can. Is there much more we can do without just looking it up at this point?
Yeah, I don't know. We just don't understand the clues particularly. But like, yeah, we'll need to. I've written them down. Did I write them down? Yeah, I wrote them down.
Yes.
So, but it's just like we don't even with them all written down in front of me. It's like I still don't really know what they're asking us to do and where. So that's a bit of a problem. Given that this guy, so for those that like, you know, just to clear up what I mean by that is like when you finish the game, there's a whole bunch. There's not ARG, but they're kind of like Fez-esque, you know, these sort of like weird things you can do in the game that unlock secrets, and if you want the good ending you've got to hunt all those down and figure them all out, which is kind of cool. It means you have to having to think a little bit, but if you came into Full Metal Fury thinking you were just going to play a co-op brawler, you might be a little disappointed if you get to that part. But it was cool. It's quite fun, the two of us working together, because Zach gets some things I don't, and then I get some things he doesn't, and it's like it's neat. It's got that you know, collaborative puzzling that's quite nice
that's
for
what,
us.
That's what we did in Fez.
Exactly. Yeah. It's or how we all did on a video on our channel for Last of the Overdin, or whatever it's called. Is it Last of the Overdin? Return of the Overdin.
Return of the Overdin. Yes.
Check it out. That series is a fun time.
Yeah,
so we did a bit more of that. So I don't know. We've probably only got a little bit left of that if we can figure out this last thing. But that's fun. I enjoy that. What else am I doing? I'm still bonanzering.
Yeah.
I now have four of the bonanzas.
You went back to the diamond or whatever.
I don't to the diamond. Oh well, yeah.
You went down both branches.
Yeah. I've been down both branches where the path splits. Yeah, and so I've got all of that stuff. I think I've I don't know how much to say without spoiling too much for Dan. That's the thing. But it's there are. I don't know. I think that the game feels a bit different from when I started. I suppose like it does seem to like get away a little bit from just punching holes.
Yeah,
like it does. It does start to. It's not like it's. Oh, like, you know, in the classic Mario fashion, I suppose, where now you're doing this, you're dedicated to doing this thing in this level. It's not quite like that. But, like, it does feel like the game has perhaps shifted just that little bit away from just punch everything. You're still punching most things. And there is a whole level dedicated to that pretty much first level approach. But it's. Yeah, it doesn't. I don't think I feel the same about it as I did at the start, and that's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It's just there is a transition going on, and it's kind of nice, I suppose. I did go back to some of the earlier levels just to cash in some of the fossils that I didn't spend when I was there, and it's like, oh, well, I could do with that upgrade, I suppose. Not that they really make a huge amount of difference.
Well, and also quite a lot of the upgrades are kind of level specific anyway.
Yeah, exactly. There was just I just thought, it's like, well, maybe having more treasure. There's nothing wrong with having more treasure chests, so I'll just go.
Well, that is the one that is definitely universally useful. Which yeah. is like, but, if you're not using any of the other buffs, just have that one on by default.
Yeah, so I'll just go back and max that one out and sort that out, because I didn't at the time. Yeah, it's a pretty good time. I think, like, there are certain... I think the bosses have moved away as well from what I complained about before, where, like, at least at first, they were a bit like punch, 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 and you're done. Like, they were so fast. But they have at least got a little bit more intricate. They're still quite quick, but, like, not... Yeah. But and some of them are actually, like, enforced, like, multi-stage affairs, I suppose. But, and I did come across the sort of the infamous part that Digital Foundry picked out, like where the performance really does tank. Like it's quite very noticeable. And I do wonder if there was a better way of achieving what they did, but like it's because of the dynamism of the terrain that's happening around you, and because it's all tied into how that terrain works. Not only is the terrain animating at that sort of blocky rate that the game is all built on, but like the actual main frame rate tanks as well, so it all becomes a bit feels kind of rubbish. But like at least that is a very quick like end to a fight kind of problem. I just find it interesting, like I've been thinking about this game a little bit, and I find it interesting that are Nintendo like the only or one of the few developers left, I suppose, that sort of take their power increase in the Switch 2 and go, nah, we're not really going to use it to improve our graphics tech. Like, not even close. We're gonna use all of that power to do voxels in some way, to do this terrain generation. We're going to come up with a new gameplay mechanic because now we can. And I don't know that there's many developers still thinking like that, right?
It's cool that there's someone thinking that way.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be kind of funny if you showed Nintendo a PC. Like, we're like, look at all the stuff you could do here. Then what game would we get? But maybe there's an element of, the classic thing of, like, work within constraints breeds creativity and all that stuff. So it's like, they were working with older Atari and were like, if only we could do this, and then they hold on to that until they can.
I mean, it would be cool to see, like, what if they could do full blown ray tracing, which they can't. Like, imagine the freaking Zelda puzzles with the ray tracing. Like, everyone else just makes it look pretty, and they're like, well, what if the light? They're like a whole game about the way light bounces off.
Oh, that would have to be Luigi's Mansion, though, right?
Yeah.
Reflect the light onto the ghosts in weird ways.
Exactly. Sure. I mean, they could probably do that within the scope of with Luigi's Mansion on Switch 2, maybe.
Maybe.
Path tracing, potentially.
I wouldn't know. Maybe not full-on path tracing, but, you know, we do have precedent, right? The Switch 2 can do ray tracing because that's how the lighting engine in Star Wars Outlaws works. It's like you couldn't take ray tracing out of that game. It's built for it. And they, by all accounts, Star Wars Outlaws on Switch 2 is a pretty decent effort.
But that's what I'm saying is like, but they're not doing anything with ray tracing apart from make it look good. Whereas Nintendo takes some new technology and they're like, okay, well, what can we do gameplay wise with this? I
mean, we're just going to have to wait like 7 more years and then that'll be the next big Nintendo game will be the ray tracing when Nintendo learns the thing that already was popular like 10 years ago, as they tend to do.
Sure, and I mean, makes a better game than anyone has. Yeah.
I mean, Nintendo haven't
just like the open world.
Nintendo haven't learned what anti-aliasing is yet, so
they seem to be aggressively against anti-aliasing for some reason. They're like, Jaggies are our brand. We love a Jaggy.
And in fairness, I can sort of like I can kind of see it to a degree. It's like you don't want to make games that like utilize DLSS too heavily and just end up being a mushy mess. It's like I get it, but maybe just put a little, even just an FXAA pass on sometimes, man. Like just a little bit. Doesn't need much. But at least hopefully games like Splatoon and stuff like they won't need to dynamically scale anymore. And you won't end up with quite so much flicker that the dynamic resolution scaling of those games caused. But anyway, it's just like this is another one of those cases where it's like, well, you know, it really isn't doing anything particularly fancy graphically, but it's what they're doing with the terrain is clearly difficult because it puts the game under stress. I'm having a pretty good time. It's pretty much my go-to at the moment still, Bonanza. If I get a moment, it's just like, I could do something else, but I'll do this. And then far too much time passes because it is quite hard to put down. I do have a limit with it, though. It does, like, it's not like I could play for endless hours. There are like, after maybe two or three hours, I start to feel a bit fatigued by it. And I still then find it hard to put the controller down because there's always that one more thing that's just out of reach, right? It's like, oh, I'll just do that while I'm here. Oh, I'll just do that while I'm here. And it's tends to be like a big level point or something, like, you know, where I've reached, like, oh, I'm going to dive down to the next layer here. Okay, stop now. Don't even look at it. Just don't even punch your way through that stupid guy's face. Just just leave the game alone and come back to it some other time. And like I said before, ooh, banana.
Oh, banana.
it still, every time, makes me grin. I love it too much. Banana. And I'm a bit of a fan of the zebra music as well. I don't know, just because the lyric is just zebra.
Pretty cool. The one lyric you could make out, at least.
Well, like, what even is Pauline? Like, is she just spouting gibberish, or is it, is it like Japanese? Yes. Or?
Well, I don't think so. Like, it's hard to hear most of the time, but I'm pretty sure it's just like some simlish action going on.
Okay, because she says, like, you can sometimes hear, like, come out.
Yeah, you can hear like individual words occasionally.
Ah, zebra, zebra. That's great.
Unfortunately, one of the least useful actual powers.
I've only ever used it on on the crumble surface that it's for. Yeah. I use the ostrich most of the time, to be fair, but the ostrich graphic, right? Just the physical presence of what that bonanza looks like is terrifying.
Yeah,
it's hideous. It was just weird. Like, but in such a brilliant way. It's like even Gnome looked at it and was just like, oh god. like when I picked up a banana and it's like right in your face for a second on screen, it's just like, ugh.
Yeah.
Get behind me, Satan. It's terrifying. Yes, I'm doing a bit of that. What else have I played? I have picked up my VR headset again a couple times on moments where there's been no one in the house, and I've played a few more hours of Seventh Guest VR. I'm determined to make some progress in that thing.
Okay.
Because it is really good. I do enjoy it. There's like some of the puzzles most of the puzzles I find pretty simple. It's usually a question of just finding what thing you need and then do it. But there are some slightly more challenging ones, like something that performed a little bit like a Lights Out style puzzle, but instead of the lights just turning on and off, they went through a sequence. But if you went too far, things broke, and then the puzzle becomes impossible. So it makes you Or the black and white tree puzzle, for those that don't know Lights Out, I guess. Similar to that, but with slightly different mechanics, and they were kind of fun. There was a game that came out on Switch, I think, earlier this year about sitting people in the right place. It was literally called Is This Seat Taken, I think. And there was a puzzle that was very similar to that, that was one of the more annoying ones in the game, because that was quite multi-step, and that involved like actually using VR-y type stuff a bit too much. So there's a room basically filled with dolls, and some of them have their heads missing. But some of the dolls aren't relevant to the puzzle. They don't have like a voice box on them. But they have heads on, and you're going to need that head to put on the dolls. So you have to take this, go over to this side of the room, pick this doll up, take it over to a guillotine, cut this doll's head off in VR. So and then pick up the thing and put it on the correct doll, and then put that doll down in the seat. And I found like the actions of like this, this is where the game went a bit glitchy for me, because it's like the actions of picking up the dolls and putting them in the right place, they didn't always snap into the right position particularly easily. And then on the odd occasion, I think there was some sort of clipping problem or some kind that then caused me as a player to be pushed in the room. So I would move around the room sometimes whilst wielding these things. And it's like, ugh. And in VR, you can make like involuntary movements. It's just like, ugh. Please don't do that. I had that happen once to me before in the kitchen puzzle, which pushed me out of bounds. So that was fun. I had to, because it's like room scale, right? There's nothing stopping you from like walking physically in space through a wall, but the game then just blacks out when you do that. And it's like, I don't know which way the actual room is now that I've been sort of pushed out of bounds by this object I was holding. So like, I have to sort of put my arms out and make sure I don't run into walls whilst trying to find my way back into the actual game room. It was kind of weird. It is a good time. Like, I think the puzzling is good. I think the room scale generally works well. The storytelling is vague but interesting. I do like the VR models thing. I think I talked about last time, right? They have like real performances that have been captured, I guess, volumetrically, I suppose. So these cutscenes play out in the VR space, but with real actors in VR space, and you can walk around them and see them from any angle you want. It's pretty cool stuff. It's a pretty neat game.
Sweet.
I think I mentioned before as well, like one of my favorite things is you have this like magic lamp that like you shine on things and it shows you them as they were at the time. Like, right, it's like a sort of decrepit mansion at first, but like you shine your light on them now and you see what it's like in pristine condition, except all of the paintings change when you shine this light on it into something slightly more sinister than they were before. So there was a monk reference that made me snigger. Just the scream just turns up in a picture, yep. And I'm like, oh, I didn't see that one go. Okay. It's cool.
Everyone's favorite emoji.
Yeah, yeah.
Monk scream, yeah.
Yeah, there's some neat stuff in that game. It's cool. But I feel like my VR legs are about maybe 1.5 to 2 hours at a time.
But I mean, that's pretty long.
Yeah, I played for an hour and a half today, by the end of it, I was like, you don't feel it at the time. That's the thing. But my headset started running out of battery, so I took it off, and then it's like, oh yeah, that was probably a good time to stop. I'm like on the cusp of it being uncomfortable, I guess.
Yeah,
but it's weird. It's not necessarily being in there; it's the stopping that's a problem. So I did a bit of that. I also played through, because I wanted something a bit calmer, perhaps for the evenings, I played through Subsurface Circular, which is...
Oh, what's that?
It's a Mike Bithell joint. A Bithell short, in fact, it describes itself as. He's the guy you may remember from Thomas Was Alone. So this is a text adventure.
Oh, okay.
Set in an underground network where you are a robot detective who decides to take on the case of another robot saying, my friend is missing. I don't know what happened. and you go against protocol to investigate it yourself without the case being assigned to you, blah, 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 blah. And the story plays out. It plays out. I say text adventure is a bit of a strain. It's kind of leaning more towards visual novel territory. You're doing an awful lot of reading of text, but the thing that elevates it more than that is the presentation. So it's not just, you know, when you think of a visual novel, right? You think of a big text box at the bottom of the screen and two anime portraits in front of you, perhaps changing pose occasionally. You know, it's way more than that. It's like the you know, it's 3D modeled subway system, but going on with atmosphere and you know, everything, the proper lighting and things moving around. The robots look cool as well in a sort of, I'm going to say, flat Chappie kind of way, if you know, like Chappie from that from the film Chappie, but not quite so. But you know, their faces are more just like solid. Solid blocks of metal. It's got they kind of look a little bit like that. It's got a cool aesthetic in that way. So all of that's modeled, and you know, people get on and off the train and things like that, and it's got all the sound that goes with it. It's you know, the atmosphere really works for that thing. It definitely elevates it above just a text adventure, and it helps that the general story and the narrative is pretty good. You are intrigued, and the processes you go to get information out of people are kind of interesting. I wouldn't say it's full of puzzles, but there's the occasional bit of puzzling. There's a way to get by. The game's system generally is, if you talk to someone, you're basically unlocking conversation points. They call them focus points in the game. So you talk to someone and they'll say something, and then you're in your LCARS like interface, like UI, you'll have a little pop-up that sort of says focus point unlocked, and then it becomes part of your inventory essentially, and then you can pick it and go like and add that into a conversation to quiz people about it or to reply with it. And it's a very simple system, but it works. It makes it a little bit more engaging than just endlessly reading text.
Sure.
And that's all it really needed. It's neat. It's got what surprised me right from the off. I don't know if you're aware of this, Dan, but like, it's got music by Dan Lesac.
Oh,
which is
as in Scroobius Pip.
As in Scroobius Pip and Dan Lesac. Yep. He does the music for the game, which is kind of neat. It's minimal. There's not a great deal of it, and a lot of it is being listened to by robots who have headphones on. See, okay. So you try and talk to them, and all you can hear is this music playing, and they don't answer you, which is kind of funny.
Kind of sweet. Okay.
But yeah, I it's only a couple hours long. It's really short. The game so it's like self-describes, it's a Biffle short. It's not a text adventure in the way that Zork is. It's more visual story with a few choices along the way. The only thing I didn't necessarily like was the binary choice of the ending, because it does that thing that I think some I just don't like when games do, where there's two achievements tied to the ending, and which ending you pick, and it really is the very last choice in the game that decides that, and the ending is pretty much identical. I mean, it is identical. You don't really see it. That's mild spoilers, I suppose. But the end, it really doesn't impact the ending, and it's like, oh, why split that into two choices and two achievements? That's quite annoying. That just means I've got to pointlessly play the last section again. For nothing different to really happen. I suppose the intent was you'd play through the whole game again and then pick a different thing. Yeah. But no. If you do want to go through it again, there is a... I only missed one achievement, and it was a secret achievement, and I looked at it and it was like, well, I never would have got that, so I didn't... I never would have understood what that was about. I'm not going to go back and get that just because... when you go back to it in the second time, there's a developer's commentary mode where all that does is it adds a robot to the scene that you can talk to at any time, and it's written by Mike Biffle, so in certain scenes you can be like, so what's this about?
Right.
Just in the context of the game, you can just be like, yeah, what was that? What was going on here?
Hold on.
Yeah.
What happened there?
Like, what inspired the graphics behind this part? Or, like, yeah. It's kind of
cool.
Yeah, it's all in-universe stuff. It's neat. Yeah, glad I played it. It filled a role for me for a few nights. Well, a couple of nights. And is that it? That might be everything. Oh no, there is one thing that I forgot to talk about last time. I gave Zendless Zone Zero a quick spin.
Oh no. Get some gadgets.
I don't even know if I've got to the gatcheriness of that game. man, it's a pretty hard game to get into. Like,
is that because you haven't spent any money?
No, it's presentation. Like, sure. Almost entirely. Like, so it's a Hoyoverse game. It's the same people that made Honkai Star Rail and Genshin Impact, but its core problem is, and cast your mind back to when I was playing Scarlet Nexus, because this is a problem in that game as well, is that it's one of those Eastern style games where there is so much conversation, inane conversation, pointlessly too much talk, that it doesn't necessarily push the story forward. It isn't particularly interesting. It repeats itself frequently. And that has made up the vast majority of my time with this thing, just reading through text and being quite bored with the text. It's the bad side of visual novels. There is a game under here somewhere, but like, I'd want to get to it. Because the things you see when you see this game is that it is a character action game in theory, but that's probably made up about 10% of my time with this thing, is actually playing the character action part of it, which seems competent, but okay. I can't see any. I haven't really discovered much in the way of depth to it yet, but then I haven't really had a chance to. But it looks really nice. When you get an animated cutscene, those are really well done. YouTube channel New Frame Plus does a bit of a breakdown on some of that stuff, and it's like, okay, yeah, I can see his points. Everything is over animated and over exaggerated.
Right. But it's
especially in the fan service department on occasion. But it's okay. But it is well made. Like, it's not just doing that for jiggle's sake. They are quite well
partially for jiggle's sake.
Partially for jiggle's sake. Yeah, they are well constructed animations, and that is true of the gameplay look and feel as well. It's just there's so little of that I've got to experience so far. I'm not 100% sure I'll go back to it just because of that. Like, it's I cannot sit through that much dialogue. That's when it's that poorly written. Or I guess it's a style. Like, I'm not even sure I can call it poorly written anymore, because that's such a thing with anime-adjacent games. It's not the first time I've encountered this.
Sure.
Some of the style is so cool. Like, it evokes some of that, like, Jet Set Radio future, like, industrial, but with a bit more of industrial flair to it. Like, it's kind of like, from a visual standpoint, it's quite engaging. Maybe a little bit of the sort of Persona, but not Persona 5, but maybe like previous Persona games, that kind of, what's the Danganronpa kind of thing. Like, there's some visual flair to it, kind of like how some of those games like to do things that I really dig. But yeah, it's a shame the actual game part, like, there's very little game. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something, or maybe this is just the opening few hours, but like, it's taking a really long time to get to the stuff, if there is stuff here. I don't know. Maybe I'll go back to it. I don't know. As I say, it's been a couple of weeks since I played, so maybe not. I think that'll do me. I played a little bit more Fast Fusion, but nothing to say there. I made the Spazzo ship. It's
is that one of the combination names?
One of the combinations, yeah.
Okay. Is it good?
It's all right.
Same as others. It's all right. Same as others. Coolio. Video games.
Video games.
I'm glad you're getting through Bonanza. I will get back to it. I've been away this weekend, so I haven't been had time for games.
But, no, like, take your Switch 2 with you.
Definitely not. No. I suppose I could have done, but I was with my friend Chris, so yeah. It wouldn't have been very social. But yeah, I suppose it's probably good for hotel rooms.
You didn't think to prop it up on the stand and play socially with your friend?
Definitely not.
Play one Joy-Con. Yeah. Run the Joy-Con over.
Yeah. One Joy-Con.
No rooftop party.
Oh, the Switch 1 I'd need for the rooftop party. They didn't advertise that, the Switch 2. Yeah.
Can't be done. It's not allowed.
And I missed us playing Skies of Arcadia. Well, I sort of didn't, or yes. I sort of did. But
you saw the game part, you didn't see the second version of us interacting part.
Yeah, we redid it after the disaster of the first recording.
Yeah. So I did watch the entire redo, so that's up on YouTube.
So you're up to date.
I am up to date. I've seen that part twice and seen the jokes once. The new jokes, I guess. To what limited extent they are. Well, I mean, there's plenty.
What is jokes?
What are jokes? Well, if you want to check that out, that's the start of a series, so there'll be plenty more. 25-year anniversary, I guess. Woo, is that right?
Apparently.
Of Skies of Arcadia Legends, which means GameCube, I guess. That's what Legends translates to.
I think it's 25 years since the Dreamcast release, not the GameCube version.
So we're playing the GameCube one, so just we're because. Slightly off.
Yeah.
Just because. Improvements, battle, whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. So check out that on YouTube and all of our other Let's Play videos on YouTube. The channel is Happy Salad, of course. And we'll be back here in a couple of weeks with another one of these salad casts. So we'll catch you then.
Ba, 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 ba.
Bye.